Sex, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the speculative interdimensional vehicle, Sex in Space. Its mission, to explore new points of view, to seek out fresh opinions, to boldly go where so many have gone before, and still somehow manage to totally miss the point. Subscribe to Sex in Space, wherever quality podcasts are found.
Hi there, I'm Tim, and welcome back to Sex in Space, here continuing to explore sex across all of its infinite dimensions. I hope everyone out there is doing just great. This is episode 25, halfway to 50, baby. Whether you're a fresh-faced, wide-eyed, first-time listener joining us on this mission, a gnarled and experienced traveller of our interdimensional cosmic adventures, or a super-intelligent AI listening to this in the distant future, it's nice to have you with us. To those tuning in on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform, we sincerely thank you for joining us. Remember to show your support by liking, rating, and subscribing. You can also find more great Sex in Space content over on TikTok, Instagram, and maybe Threads sometime soon in the future. Just search for us using our handle, sexinspace.com. That's sexinspace, D-O-T-C-O-M. We genuinely love hearing from our listeners and engaging with our community. Your feedback means the world to us. We're all on this journey together, so please feel free to reach out any way you like. Now let's dive into an incredible interview. Our very own Jane Cherrington had the pleasure of sitting down in person with Suzanne Werder, a nurse practitioner from the New Zealand Sexual Health Society. With an impressive 29 years of experience in the field of sexual health, working within Aotearoa's unique and diverse society, Suzanne has had a career serving individuals of all ages and backgrounds on such things as sexual disease prevention and education to promoting sexual well-being and wellness. Let's dive in.
Today, I'm very excited because we have Suzanne with us. Suzanne Werder is coming to us from the Sexual Health Society in New Zealand.
Yes.
And she's also a long friend. She's a short friend, actually.
I'm a very short friend.
She's a long time friend as well. And what I'm excited about today is that you bring both the professional experience of working in sexual health for 29 years, and you've raised two children and educated them about sex and sexuality. So you bring that private, sort of personal, professional. Like, a lot of the time it's theory and you've lived it.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation.
Yeah. So I'm speaking from the Sexual Health Society, not because I can't speak from the DHB.
Great. So, excellent. I feel very honoured that you're here with us.
Thank you.
And excited because I think a lot of the time for people listening, they're looking for ideas about how they can navigate. So let's start with, what is your role? Can you define it for us?
So so I'm a nurse, and I've been a nurse since 94. And my whole nursing career, I've been working within the sexual health field with a little bit of work within sort of youth and youth justice during a period of time to kind of get a little bit more different experience and widen my skills. During that time, I've done general sexual health nursing. I have evolved to now that I'm a nurse practitioner, which means that I can provide more care to the populations that I serve as a nurse. And those populations include basically the general populace that may have some sexual health issues. And as a nurse, we're coming from a disease perspective, as a nurse, it's working under Te Whare Tapewha model, which is a New Zealand model, or Aotearoa model of Māori health. It's an inclusive model that touches on all aspects of health, the physical, the psychological, the spiritual, the community, and it's based on a Marae meeting house style. would be another great topic for your podcast on its own.
So it takes it out of the illness space.
It acknowledges the illness space, but also the other space within it that we're looking from a wellness perspective. Yeah. You know, what do we need to sort so you can feel happy and free of concern? What preventative things can we do in that can empower you to feel more okay about yourself?
So what about with the, if we look to adults who never got sex educated and who struggle with their sexual well-being?
How do you support
people? What advice do you give for people who feel like they need help but they just don't know how to start?
Well, there's this great podcast called Sex and Space.
Thanks, Doc.
Which, you know, is, it's great, you know, the sex therapists on there, like slowing things down, talking things through, and, you know, so reaching out, working out ways that you can educate yourself, normalize the lack of knowledge that we have, because people don't know. And if we haven't had these conversations, then how would we know?
Yeah.
And so, like, normalizing that it is more normal not to be having these conversations than having them. I wish it was the other way around. Educating yourself as much as you can, using podcasts, using books, using Libby from the library, you know, there's lots of ways of doing that. And maybe having a brave conversation with a trusted friend. Or a health professional, you know. I have, within my work life, I have conversations with people about, you know, what's normal and what are normal expectations. So, you know, I've recently had conversations around comparing what is sex in the real world compared to sex in a porn movie. So, you know, 1.5 minutes of sexual in and out is generally quite enough. But the 45 minutes that you might watch in a porn movie is not really realistic. That is drug-induced. And there is a lot of skill that's going into that, and possibly not that much fun.
Yeah, and also that kind of focus on that, you know, the heteronormative penetrative sex, right? It might be a minute and a half of that bit, but I feel like people are so out of touch with pleasure and their bodies when what's considered erotic or erogenous is reduced to this area. When, in fact, your whole body can be an erogenous zone.
Well, the skin is the biggest sexual organ of the body.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's like, And literally, it's just this, like you're saying, a heteronormative, missionary understanding of what sex is. And it's really sad and disappointing. And if that's the perception that someone has, then we need to widen that.
Yeah.
And you generally widen it through education. And that might be really good quality porn, but that's porn that people would have to pay for.
Ethical.
ethical quality. And so, you know, podcasts, books.
Yeah, and conversations. But also normalising things like, you know, there's a piece that Toshi's working on, one of the team at the moment, which came up because we talked to a great sex worker. She was brilliant. And she said men can have orgasms without erections and without ejaculation. And I'm like, yes, of course. But I suddenly said to Toshi, well, yes, of course, but we should actually kind of put this out there, because for a lot of people they don't know that.
Yeah.
And that's part of older sexual health a lot of the time.
And it's that kind of, you know, the term that comes to mind is the money shot. It's all about the money shot, which is the orgasm ejaculation. And that is like a moment that is not realistic for everybody. But that doesn't mean that the pleasure is not there for everybody. So it's a very binary way of looking at things if you're just focusing on that.
Yeah. We were talking about condoms yesterday, and this dreadful move to suggest that women are responsible for putting them on in a way that's sexy. It's like, hang on a minute. I don't want to learn to put a condom on with my mouth sexily. You learn how to put it on sexually. You know your way around these things better than me.
And the thing is, you can put them on with your mouth, but you need to make sure you're not wearing lipstick. You need to make sure you don't catch them with your teeth and all that sort of thing.
Oh, why not lipstick?
Because the latex is weakened by the oil in lipstick.
There you go.
So if it's your thing, that's fun. But one of the best ways that you can practice using condoms is like without an audience.
Right.
So if you're having a wank,
use a condom.
Practice putting it on. Make sure you're putting it on the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you can do it easily.
Yeah.
Make sure you feel confident that you can maintain an erection and have an ejaculation and you know that it works without the anxiety of, you know, an audience.
Yeah, no, that's good advice.
Yeah. One of the things about condoms being expensive is that condoms are funded. So if you go to a sexual health clinic, and you can find out where they are around the country by looking up the New Zealand Sexual Health Society or Family Planning, you can get a prescription for condoms or they give them out to you for free. Which is great.
That is great. So that's a New Zealand thing, right?
That's a New Zealand thing, yeah.
But it's good checking in any country what's available.
Completely. It's really worthwhile. And it's really worthwhile, you know, Googling where your free sexual health services are around the place. All over the world, there's often some services for free.
For parents particularly listening, how would you advise parents to think about approaching their kids' sex education today?
Yeah. Oh, that's such an interesting question, because I had a girlfriend who called me up when her kids were teenagers and said, hey, I thought you could maybe have that conversation. And
the conversation.
Yeah, and it's not a conversation. No. It is a million moments and times around using the correct words for our bits, and you know, you wipe your vulva, and you know, I can remember years ago going to the vagina monologues and having a little tantrum because when they wanted to sing the Cunty Cunty song, I was like, I'm so sorry. You've been talking about the vagina monologues, but actually you've been talking about vulvas.
Right.
How can we get it so wrong at so many levels?
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so I think it's, you know, when you're changing a nappy, I'm just going to wipe your vulva.
Yeah.
It's not a bad word. It's like your earlobe.
Yes.
And that acknowledging genitalia and from a very kind of basic level, we talk about, you know, show me your hands, show me your nose. Why don't we use the right words for penises and scrotums? And that's all the research around that has shown that that is a protective for children and for adults to actually be able to name.
It does. And yet the response you get from online trolls when you suggest that children should be taught these things is pretty vitriolic.
I know, and I don't understand where that comes from.
It sounds, through the commentary, like the naming feels like to them a gateway to becoming sexually active.
Which is so interesting, because actually it's just talking about a part of the body. Mm. And sex education is not about being sexually active. It's around education around your sexual organs. You know, please don't wash with soap, because that skin is really precious. Wash with water, not too hot. You don't need to rub it dry. It's a patting dry area. All these aspects are part of our sex education around how do we look after ourselves. So I think it's all those tiny aspects, you know, thinking about the conversations I've had with the kids over the years, how to physically look after their genitals, and then around when they're in relationships, being upfront around how you're, you know, if you're having sex, talking about consent being mm-hmm. It's not a yes or no kind of situation. It's an enthusiastic yes is what you're looking for.
Yes.
So not a timid okay. So like having, you know, you want to both be enthusiastic about it. And so having those conversations around consent, having those conversations around STI testing or sexually transmitted testing so that you keep yourself and your partner safe. It's such an easy, simple way to show respect. And then if it's a heterosexual relationship, what are you thinking about contraception? And contraception being a partnership. So,
yeah.
And, you know, one of the conversations I have with a lot of my clients over the years is that if whoever's doing the lion's share of the contraception, the other person should definitely be paying for it.
Right.
So if a woman, cis woman, is taking an oral contraceptive pill, they should not be paying for that doctor's appointment. Their partner, that wouldn't that be an easy way to share the load?
And to feel connected.
Yeah, it's like part of it. It's a sharing the load.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, back to that shame issue, you know, so much of that side of it is kind of done behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, so much easier to have sex and talk about it.
Like, yeah.
It's a very much wanting to avert your eyes kind of conversation.
Yeah. Well, and back to the vocabulary, having the words to use is the start point for parents, right?
Yeah.
And then for the kids themselves, being able to name their own body parts.
Yeah.
And to describe how they feel rather than down there.
Yeah.
You know, that's even in terms of wellness, if I hurt myself, if something's not right,
yeah,
to be able to say where it's not right.
Yeah, and the like removing the fuckama from that area or the shame from that area, because we're able to use the right names. It stops it being hidden behind layers and layers of words that we have to unpick to work out what they are.
So for those parents who didn't have micro conversations like your friend who called you and said, help. So when you're fighting a rearguard action, because I notice a lot of people I talk to, and often it's women, who are taking the responsibility for having the conversation even.
Yeah.
And they will say things like, oh, he just can't do it. And they're well educated.
Yeah.
They're sexually active.
Yeah.
They consider themselves pretty liberal,
yeah,
and yet they can't talk to their kids about sex. Where do they start?
Gosh, it's tricky, isn't it? I think by my poor children have had conversations all the way through. So I suppose if you haven't started by saying, I feel a bit uncomfortable about this, but I actually think this is something that we should both feel uncomfortable or comfortable with together, like acknowledging, if you pretend that you are comfortable with something that you're not, you know. And young people are fantastic at picking up the micro messages that we give. So if you feel awkward, say, look, I feel awkward and this conversation is really important, and this is want to be the first of many conversations.
That's a great start.
Yeah.
And one of the pieces of research I read recently I thought was interesting. We're working on a book on how to talk to your kids about porn at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, porn for teenagers is a great starting place, because it makes it about sex and sexuality and an important conversation, but not about them.
Yeah.
And they respond with quite a lot of voice to that, whereas talking about me and sex, you know, is really tricky. But what do you think about porn?
Oh, I think lots of things, but I just want to go back to one thing before that. Actually giving information for someone that might be useful for somebody else is a really good way to talk to people. So if you're talking to your child, it's like, this might not be relevant for you, but for one of your friends this might be relevant. Like using that opportunity to have a conversation without the spotlight being on the young person can be really useful.
That's a great technique.
Yeah, and I use that clinically as well, just as in, this might not be relevant for you, but for your mates you might really be able to have their back if you know this.
That's cool.
Yeah. Porn. I have so much I think about porn.
The question was, I was offering it as a parent speaking to a child to open a space.
Yes, yeah, I think it's great.
What do you think about porn?
Yeah.
But yes, what do you think about porn?
But, yeah, and because there's so much bad porn.
Yeah.
And we don't have the skills to critique it as well. Mm. And but also, yeah, saying to young people, you know, what do you think about porn? You know, there seems to be quite the range, and I've read an article on it. It's always, you know, if you can just distance it and to try and get that. And porn is a really good jumping off perspective point for people because... you can talk about the reality of sex and intimacy and kind of the actual physical act of sex, which is kind of only just part of sex, which is only just part of intimacy. And porn is sometimes, particularly poor porn, it's just about the physical act of sex, so it can be a good start point for those conversations around that is a component of, but not all. And the kind of the bar that's set by porn, I think, is really unrealistic for people. You know, the size of the genitalia, the makeup that is used to intensify aspects, the duration, the highs of the orgasm, it's all very, very plus one Hollywood kind of style.
It's like action movies, though, right? It's not meant to be real.
Oh, it's like The Fast and the Furious.
There you go, yes.
It's gone from, you know, whichever version was the first one, and now they're having nuclear explosions or something, apparently.
Yeah, I think there's, what, 10?
I don't know.
My son watched them all back to back the other weekend.
With my son?
Yes. It must have been with him. Excellent. Nice one, lads. But that's a really good analogy. We wouldn't send our kids out to drive without giving them a sense of how a car worked, driving lessons, you know, making sure that we gave them a bit of a view on traffic.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the friends I'm talking about don't feel the same way about sex, sexuality, porn, enough to want to get in there because they don't have a roadmap themselves.
Yeah.
And so 29 years is a reasonable amount of time to be in the field.
Yeah.
What would you say you've seen are the biggest changes over that time in terms of sex education itself as a discipline?
Oh, that has changed beautifully. Back in the day, I can remember being given cards with these pictures of diseased genitals and discharges, and it's like, you know, this is what gonorrhea looks like and this is what chlamydia looks like, and it was kind of really scary. And now it's moved on to these are bacteria and viruses that can travel with something that is very, very human, which is sexual connection. So what do we need to do to limit the travelling of these infections when people are doing something normal and human? So that's, you know, that's prevention methods like condoms and pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV, which prevents the transmission of that. So you know, I do... when I do education, it's like, you know, they say, well, what's the most common presentation of chlamydia? And I say, well, it looks something like this. Because it looks just like most of these infections have no symptoms at all.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, with gonorrhea, you can get a nasty discharge. But that's only if it's in the urethra, not if it's in the throat or in the bottom.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Pictures are irrelevant. So it's, I think the education has really improved.
And so the rates of syphilis have increased. Have rates of STIs increased?
They're kind of at a relatively stable level. There in 2021, I think the ESR, which is the Environmental Science and Research Department, published an article saying that there was a bit of a decrease in gonorrhea and chlamydia rates, you know, slightly decrease, but that wasn't amongst Māori and Pacific populations. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, a bit of an indication of where health services are not actually meeting the needs of Māori and Pacific populations, not necessarily that they're doing anything different.
Right.
So I have a little bit of hope in my heart that the changes to the health services may provide some improvement, but it's not going to be tomorrow.
Mm. And what about with young people? Are rates increasing in the youth community?
Youth is really interesting because, like, people with hair my colour are really good at bagging youth.
Mm.
And the Youth 2000 series, which is a longitudinal study that's been historically run out of Auckland University, I'm not sure where it's run now, interviews students at high school level around the country, and it's a really in-depth piece of research. And what that's shown over the last two cycles is that the age of sexual debut, which is when they're first having sex, is getting higher.
Mm-hmm.
So people are having sex a little bit later. People were more likely to be using condoms or some contraception, and less likely to be smoking and using alcohol. So it's those young people today are much better than young people of my day in lots of ways. And so, but alongside that, we need to make sure we've got the services there to support the people who are having sex at a younger age, because they are more vulnerable than somebody at a slightly older age. More tricky to navigate health services, more tricky to ask for help. Yeah,
that's interesting. We seem to be bucking a trend in that case, because globally condom use with younger people is becoming a problem, apparently.
Yeah. Well, it is absolutely becoming a problem, and or a thing with men who have sex with men with pre-exposure prophylaxis for HIV, there has definitely been a decline in condom use internationally, and that's been mirrored within New Zealand as well.
Right.
So, and I would have to go back and double check those stats, but that was my understanding from the last
survey. I think probably one of the things to focus on in another episode is the fact that research and statistics, you know, that you can find numbers to support every argument out there. It depends who did the research, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there does seem to be an issue around how enthusiastic people are to use condoms still. And it's something to promote in terms of, as you say, a method of prevention of transmission.
Yeah, and all the way we promote condoms and how we support people in learning how to use them, and that, you know, that condoms are a gateway to a great deal of fun, as opposed to condoms being a protective thing. It's like a seat belt and all that sort of thing.
Right.
It's like you can have stress-free fun.
Right.
Lower risk.
That's a nice framing.
Do you know what I mean? It's so lovely. It's like, because it's what they've, ideally, and we're talking about the positive aspects of sexual connection, ideally when people are having sex, it's for the fun of it.
Yes.
So let's talk about how we can make it fun, stress-free. You know, if you want to make it exciting, do it outside, but use a condom. So
that's brilliant. Yeah. And that sex-positive attitude to how you educate, is that reasonably recent in the discipline as well?
It's really tricky because we all take ourselves into our professional bodies.
Right.
And we are moving in a more sex positive way, you know, about you know, normalizing sex, normalizing the pleasure and the joy, and it should be fun. But every clinician who is working in that area may have different views, right, or attitudes and things like that. But I think absolutely in general, it is, if you're working in this area, it is about being positive around sex.
So it's been amazing talking to you. As a kind of parting shot from your end, for the parents out there trembling at the thought of sex educating their children, what would be your kind of start young, yes, learn the language of the body, but any other kind of top tips for them?
In Te Whare Tapewha, which is this model, sex and sexuality and spirituality sit in the same corner of the whare.
Mm-hmm.
Who we are as sexual beings is really, really important to who we are as beings. So if we can educate ourselves and feel strong in that, I think that that actually raises up our spirit. Mm. And anything as a parent that helps to strengthen the spirit of the next generation is really powerful. Mm. So if some of that is as simple as allowing a person to own their own body, to acknowledge that their own body can give them pleasure and joy, and can also be a way of giving pleasure and joy to other people with their consent,
mm-hmm,
later on, is a really, really important thing. So I think, mm, thinking about, you know, it being an important part of resilience and the spirit of a person, yeah.
That's quite beautiful, thank you. Yeah, very cool. Thank okay, you. Parents, good luck out there.
Good luck.
Thanks so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Really hope you enjoyed that one. You can check out the New Zealand Sexual Health Society on www.nzshs.org. Before we sign off, we want to remind you to check out our book, available at sexandspace.com/book, or simply search for The Organ Education Forgot on Amazon. Don't forget to leave a like, follow, comment or review wherever you're tuning in from. Your support means the world to us. Until the next time, safe travels, and see you on the next episode.